B-Pod Studios.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Dutcher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. And Rich, I have no idea what this is.
There's a weird phenomenon that happens across all the radio stations in most every city at a certain time of the week. So when I was in a band and we would play on a Saturday night, we would drive all night to come home. And pulling into town, we would have the radio on. We'd usually be getting in town around like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning. And if you've ever been in the car and you've been listening to the radio around that time, it's really spooky because you flip from station to station and there's no music. There's nothing on except for these public service shows, which every station, I believe by the FCC, is required to run.
Yes, and like it's the most depressing thing in the world. Like if you can't sleep and you get up on a Sunday and like go get bagels or something and you turn on the station and it's public service.
And it's like Delicious Dish. It's like someone speaking like this, talking about, we have Anne from the Brockton Public Library talking about the obliteration of the Dewey Decimal System. Hi, Ann. How are you doing this? And it goes on for an hour. So I think there's an hour-long community service requirement that every station has to do. And I think that they've calculated that the least listened to time of the entire week is 5 or 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning.
Yes.
Well, 2 weeks ago, I just happened to be up on a Sunday morning. And I turned the radio on, and our station was on, and I took a listen. This is something that they call, this is a Sunday, Boston Sunday Review, and it airs at 6 a.m.
No, this is not the Mickey Six Guide.
No, this is not. This is,
there used to be a guy who did it at WBCN that dressed exactly like Nikki Six.
He did, and he changed his name, I believe.
Or he had people call him, like, something Six.
Yeah, something Six with the two X's, so you knew it was because of Nikki Six.
Right.
So I happened to be in the car, and I turned on the station, and this is a show called Boston Sunday Review with Matt Schaefer. And this is what I heard.
You can physically communicate with animals living and deceased.
That's correct. From the time I was probably about 4 years old, they would take me visiting, and if you had a pet in the house, it would gravitate towards me. And then when we would be leaving, I would say something to my mother like, you know, that dog doesn't feel good, Mom. That dog's stomach hurts. So I started doing that when I was probably 4 years old.
Now, is it a public service to let this woman out of the house?
I'm trying to figure out,
how is this a public service?
Like, right. I mean, like, sometimes they have people coming in talking about, you know, the tea or local issues. Woman who speaks to dead pets.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure where that
falls. Well, it's a public service that you can have her come over and pretend for half an hour and then left.
So where do you go with this interview? Okay. Like, what direction do you go into here? She can speak to dead animals. What do you say?
Well, it's interesting, Rich, because animals not only cannot talk at all, as far as I know, they have pea-sized brains. But maybe when they're dead, they can't talk either. So even if animals could talk, which, no.
They can't.
They cannot talk. Certainly when they're dead. Like, people can't talk when they're dead. So I'm assuming this, I'm calling this hogwash. Maybe he got so bored and he knows no one's listening. He's just like, F it, I'm going to entertain myself.
Right. You're like, nobody's. It's the Bob Uecker thing from
Major
League.
Him.
Nobody's listening anyway.
Yeah, can't blame him.
I might as well get a kick out of it. I found this crazy ass lady. I might as well put her on.
At the age of 10, you taught your dog how to count.
Yes. So when I'm doing an animal reading, 95% to 98% of my readings are by phone.
98%. I wonder why that is.
By phone.
So everyone can sit around and mute it and hide their laughter.
I hold up the cell phone to the dog. How does that happen? Right, how do you right. do my phone?
Where is Benji?
What are you doing?
Hold the phone up to Benji's muzzle.
Can we periscope this deer?
The animal's not making no noise.
I just my phone.
Like I'm sitting here and the animal keeps walking. Like what animal can be like on the phone? I'm just gonna sit here. Yeah, sure. Put the phone up to my ear. I'll sit tight.
Can you Skype my fish?
I was just like, the cat has run under the shed.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Fred, you should do that. You should hire this woman and say, my cat is under the shed and he would like to speak to you.
Hey.
You're putting flyers up all over the neighborhood, jackass. I'm just steps away under the shed. I'm not fooled by that bowl of food that you put on the back porch. You're just going to try to grab me. Brian, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good morning. This lady is like the lobster lady at Dinner for Schmucks at the end of the movie where she reads the dead lobster on the table.
You know what the cat's thinking? Feed me. And then you know what the dog's thinking? I can't wait for everyone to leave so I can eat the cat's feces. Hey, lady, I got something to say. F you. You know what I'm thinking about? That tabby across the street.
It's been a while.
Giving her the old high hard one.
By the way, hang on. They just glossed over the fact that she said that she taught her dog to count by the age of four.
Matt doesn't follow up.
Yeah, I'm like, well, hang on.
Matt Schaefer didn't follow up.
How does this happen? How does it count? Does it use a paw? Does it like,
or you could say
nod its head? Does it bark?
Martin! Like, why would you want him to be able to count anyway? Like, what good is that? That's no fun. Like you work at a bakery, and after you're done, you got to count up the money, and then
you take him to the casino, and he helps you, win a little cash. You put him at the other table.
I ain't no Rain Man, Jack. Cut me in.
The rest are by Skype or FaceTime. So if I'm doing an animal reading, you're required to give me your pet's name and a photo, and that's all I need. And for me, it's like stepping inside of them and becoming the animal. If they're nauseous,
cutting off the skin and becoming the animal. The still beating heart of a feline.
And for me, it's like stepping inside of them and becoming the animal. If they're nauseous, I become nauseous. If their leg hurts, my leg would hurt.
When did you realize that you could communicate with animals who had passed
over?
Do you hear their voices or intuitively understand
their
message?
Oh, no, they have voices. Animals have voices. And they have high...
No. They don't have voices at all. No. They don't.
And they have high-pitched and low-pitched, just like humans do. And I'd like to give you an example. I actually went to this house to see this woman's two dogs. And when I walked in, the dogs were sitting in front of me, but something was pulling me to the right. And there was a picture window there, and there was a horse. She was staring at me. And I said to this woman, I have to go speak to that horse. She goes, well, I've got you here for the dogs. I said, I can't do anything till I speak to that horse. So when I went out, she looked me in the eyes and said, do you know where my baby is?
Do you ever see that show Crossing Over with John Edward? You ever see that where he's like, spirits are pulling me to the guy in the third row.
Let me at that horse. You're here for the dogs. Nah, let me at that horse. What do you got to say? Like taking dumps and eating.
At what point did you say, all right, you can hear different voices. Can you imitate one of the voices for me? Yes, I have a cat that sounds like Lou Holtz. Fuffer and fuck a tad.
They all sound like Sylvester.
Right. Well, there you have it. I don't blame the guy.
Mike was saying that this guy will have people in studio, and he'll just, he's got a list of questions and doesn't deviate from the list. And they'll say something so bad, crap, insane, and he'll just gloss it over and just be, I'm getting this done.
Listen.
I can't wait to get out of here. No, it's my requirement.
Yeah, they're paying him, and he might as well find the strangest people to entertain himself. Yeah, I mean, that's
and
what
I would
do,
too. And if this is the case, I am setting my alarm every Sunday morning.
Yep. All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Chris Mannix about all the doings here in the NBA and how it affects the Celtics.
Deal.
Miss something?
Wonder Woman was there, but she's lost all her powers.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports.
Animals have voices. I have to go speak to that horse.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We have Chris Mannix, but very quickly. John, you have experience with these animal whisperers?
Hey, guys. Hey.
Hey.
Hey, hey John. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so my fiance's family, they have a dog. It's 15 years old. God bless them. And so their parents are having a hard time trying to come to grips with maybe it's his time on earth is ending. So they hired one of these whisperers to come and talk to the family and the dog. And like, she came in, she was acting professional and, you know, asking all the questions, you know, saying things about like, oh, how's, you know, like the dog is, you know, he, I think he's ready, but he'll tell you when he's truly ready.
You're okay. Breaking up.
Yeah, he was saying that he'd tell you right, and the guy tweeted us and said that he couldn't stop laughing at this woman, and the woman started getting angry at him.
Well, I mean, you got to expect some of that when your whole business is a sham. Chris Mannix is the senior writer for Sports Illustrated, and he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hello, Mr. Mannix.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, all right, so interesting weekend. What's your read on what's going to happen with the Celtics now that this is all done and over with?
Well, it's not exactly back to the drawing board, but it is certainly a step back. I mean, they had spent the better part of the last 2 years, you know, hoarding these assets in order to make a run at Anthony Davis. They believed, you know, dating back to last fall, that they would be able to pair Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving together. That obviously unraveled over the course of this season, and now here they are with no Davis and an almost certainty that Kyrie Irving is gone. So now I think they almost go back to the position they were in before the Irving trade and trying to build organically and, you know, trying to identify either via a trade with some of their draft picks or using those picks in the draft, another player that they can add to this young core.
Do you think if Danny Ainge had pushed Jason Tatum to the center of the table and played poker with New Orleans, they would have taken the Celtic deal? Or were, because the Lakers offered up so many draft picks and the draft pick swaps over the next 5 years, do you still think the Lakers would have won out?
Well, there was a sense from the people I talked to within the Celtics that the Laker draft considerations were pretty overwhelming. And those swap rights, as people know in Boston, are incredibly valuable when you can, you know, exchange draft picks, you know, 7 years from now. I mean, that's pretty significant. All that being said, the Pelicans did want Jason Tatum. You know, they believe, like many in this league believe, that Jason Tatum has the potential to be a franchise player. So if the Celtics had made Jason Tatum the centerpiece of a deal that included some other pieces like Marcus Smart and multiple draft picks, it's a hypothetical, but I do think that would have been enough to get the deal done. But that would have been crazy. It just would have, without any assurances from Anthony Davis. In fact, the exact opposite, if you listen to Rich Paul and some of the things he said publicly in SI last week, I just don't think you could have done a deal like that without getting any guarantees.
Is this that bad of a place to be? I'm thinking about the East and what's going on, and we don't know what's going to happen to Kawhi Leonard and where he's going to go. I mean, if he stays in Toronto, then that's obviously a massive problem. But with the Celtics I guess ending up with the younger guys taking over and it being a youth movement, is it really that bad of a place to be next year?
No, In fact, I kind of wrote that this morning, that I don't think, you know, there's this perception that the Celtics, without, you know, Kyrie and without Anthony Davis, are all of a sudden going to fall into like an 8 seed or something like that. That's just, I find that unlikely. I mean, their talent is such that I think they can be a top 4 seed in the conference next year. And you mentioned Toronto above them. I mean, Toronto, I think it's a coin flip at best if they keep Kawhi Leonard. But beyond the Raptors, you've got Philadelphia with massive free agency issues this summer with two of their marquee guys in Harris and Jimmy Butler. You have Milwaukee, which has to deal with Chris Middleton's free agency, and perhaps equally as important, Malcolm Brogdon as a restricted free agent. They could have some problems. Brooke Lopez probably on his way out the door in Milwaukee. So the teams that were above the Celtics in the standings have to deal with problems of their own, significant problems out there. Now, there are some variables here. The biggest one, of course, is who plays point guard with Kyrie gone. I mean, do you bring back Terry Rozier and hope you can rehabilitate Rozier to being the player he was before this past season, the guy we saw in the playoffs from 2 years ago? Or do you go out and try to solidify that position with another player? We've all kind of heard the Mike Conley stuff. I don't think the price for him in a trade would be too high, but sitting his contract on the books is pretty difficult. That's, I think, the biggest decision that the Celtics are going to have to face. I think they'll kick around a lot of ideas, but finding a way to solidify that point guard position could be the difference between being a top 3 or 4 seed or being somewhere in the 5 to 6.
You mentioned Rozier. Do you think he can be the point guard that he thinks he can be? It's amazing how his attitude has changed overnight now that Kyrie's gone.
Yeah, I honestly think he can, and he's young enough. And the one thing I've known about him, and coaches have talked about him over the years, he works hard enough that I think if you put him back in a situation where you're empowering him as a 30-plus minute per night point guard, I think it's still salvageable. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think there certainly are some fences to be mended. I don't know what his rationale was for kind of going on ESPN and napalming everyone the way he did at that time. But once that they get past that, I still think he can be a part of this team. I mean, he was great in the 2018 playoffs, and I think that at least part of that is sustainable with Terry Rozier long term.
For some reason, Chris, I'm feeling a little uneasy about this Al Horford situation. He's got until tomorrow to decide whether he's going to opt into this final year of his deal. And I know when the season ended, he said he wanted to stay here, but now that the Anthony Davis and Kyrie thing and all that stuff's not going to happen, you know, there's part of me that thinks that the guy hasn't won a championship, and maybe, just maybe, he might be looking elsewhere. What do you know about that, and do you think that he is indeed going to opt in for that final year here?
Well, my understanding is that there is a Tuesday deadline, but I believe they can push it back, you know, for another week or 2 or 10 days if both sides agree on that thing. And I wouldn't be surprised, from what I understand, if that happens. I do think Al Horford wants to stay. And as much as anything, I mean, he's got the $30 million option. He'd like to get multiple years tacked onto that deal that will take him into, you know, the 35, 36 range in terms of age of his career. And I think that's of significant importance to Horford at this point. I mean, if he opts out of that contract, he would still get a significant deal somewhere. But I don't know what the total compensation on that package will ultimately be. And I just think Al's pretty comfortable, you know, playing for Brad Stevens. He likes the system. And I think Al knows that they haven't quite, you know, wiped the books on this team being a championship contender. I think they still can be in the next couple of years with the right deals. So I think they're going to do everything they can on both sides to find a deal that works for Al Horford and the Celtics.
And Chris, I'm sure you know by now the report in The Athletic about Kyrie Irving possibly going to the Lakers because he still wants to play with Anthony Davis. And my understanding by reading this story is that the Lakers don't have a max cap slot at the beginning of July, but they will at the end of July. Can you kind of flesh that out for us?
Well, yeah, I mean, the way it kind of works with the Lakers' salary cap situation is that if they can convince the Pelicans to wait until July 30th to execute the Davis deal, and they just basically agree to a bunch of stuff with free agents before then, they can have about $32-plus million in cap space. If the Pelicans say, we want to execute this deal on July 6th, the first day of official free agency, then it's only about $27 million, which is substantial given everything that kind of goes into all this. Now, I don't see what incentive the Pelicans would have to wait. I mean, they are now in the Lakers losing business. I mean, they want to see the Lakers put together the weakest team they possibly can over the next 6 years. So why would they what incentive would they have, unless it was an agreed-upon incentive prior, that they'd sweeten the pot with one of these swaps, to wait until July 3rd? I just don't think so. I think the Lakers, I think they'll struggle to put together a max salary slot for anyone, much less Kyrie Irving. And look, I've been told by different sources, and my understanding, he's going to one of the New York teams. I think it's the Nets. I'm not sure, but I'd be surprised if Kyrie was anywhere but New York next year.
Who's he joining?
I don't know. I mean, look, the Durant-Kyrie stuff is hard to read at this moment. It got far more complicated after the injury. Wherever Kyrie goes next year in New York, it's probably going to be him and not a ton else. I mean, I guess maybe if you go to Brooklyn, it's Kyrie and D'Angelo Russell. You try to make that work. But the Brooklyn stuff, I'm trying to figure out how exactly that works, like for exactly. Kyrie Irving. Like, yep. Except that, you know, you go there and you're close to home and you get to choose the place that you're playing in for the first time in your career, which I get. I mean, everybody wants to be empowered and pick where they wind up spending their formative years of their professional life. But Brooklyn's like Boston Light. It's like you go there and you've got a whole bunch of young guys. You got D'Angelo Russell, who's like a souped-up Terry Rozier. You know, Russell spent all last year empowered and made the All-Star team. And if Kyrie comes in, and if they keep him, which is no guarantee, all of a sudden you're putting those two together in the same backcourt. You also have Kenny Atkinson, who is an excellent coach, but he's like a facsimile of Brad Stevens. Like, he is a guy that believes in the process and believes in development and believes in getting better every single day, where Kyrie's not built like that. I mean, the only reason the Lakers make any sense on any level is that Kyrie could go back to doing what he did in Cleveland, which is kind of treating the regular season like an annoyance and then just get to the playoffs and raise your game to another level. I mean, that the Nets stuff, even though I do think they're front runners here, I just don't quite get it.
Yeah, and if he goes to L.A., he doesn't have to be the guy, because we've learned that that's not what he's good at. I mean, in Boston, everyone counted on him to be the man, and apparently that's not the kind of role that he wanted to take
on. Yeah, Kyrie plus young team means failure. That's what we've learned.
I just don't get it. I think, you know, and Brad, from what I know about Brad Stevens and Kenny Atkinson, Brad is not as, I don't want to call Kenny volatile, but Kenny will jump down your throat if he doesn't think you're doing things the right way. I can just see that relationship, if it comes to fruition, having its bumps along the way. I mean, he's still an unbelievable talent. And if you're the Nets, you have a chance to acquire a Kyrie Irving in free agency while also putting a dent in the Celtics at the same time, which is no small thing. You go and do it, but that is not, to me, a natural fit in Brooklyn.
All right. Well, Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated, we always enjoy the time, sir.
You got it, guys.
All right. See you, man.
All right. Yesterday, Fox Sports had the big U.S. Open. My dad's in town, so the U.S. Open was on a lot more longer than it normally would be, and they brought a special guest in. We have some of the audio, but then I will explain to you the rest of the audio that I heard, because we can't find it.
You had somebody stepping on Joe Buck's territory.
Yeah, and Joe Buck did not like it, but we will have that for you. Here are the headlines.
98.5, the sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Be a part of this thing.
Watch the show on the Sports Hub channel on the Twitch app.
Is that a euphemism for some kind of sex?
It's Toucher and Rich on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. My sister-in-law and my parents are in town because my son's fifth grade graduation is today, something that Rich dismisses its importance.
Mm-hmm. I dismiss the way it's like we had a speaker, a guy who came in and delivered a what is it called? A speech about what you need to do in life and how to live a good life.
Speech.
A commencement speech to a bunch of sixth graders, which I just thought was weird. At one point, I just turned to my wife and goes, these are sixth graders.
You don't think when your son, because your school, your hoity-toity private school goes mm-hmm. to sixth grade.
Goes to sixth grade, yep.
You don't think that you'll be emotional?
When they show the videos and stuff, sure. But that, no, hell no.
Okay. Well, nonetheless, that is happening today, but they are in town. And so the U.S. Open was on for far longer than it normally would have been. So I was watching on Saturday to appease my father. I turned off The Office begrudgingly mm-hmm. and put on Fox. And the good thing about Fox is that there is no Jim Nance. Jim Nance is especially annoying when he's doing golf. As annoying he is at everything. This is a man who takes a picture of how he likes his toast cooked to restaurants and hands it to people, to which I say, if I'm a place that's serving breakfast, you know what? Get the hell out of here. I'm not bringing back toast for your $5 tip. Leave now. Amscray. Get out of here. Here's how I like my toast. Go to French Laundry and tell them what to do.
I mean, just the fact that he brings a picture around.
No. So you want me to go tell a short order cook that this is how you want your toast to look? If I'm the cook, I say, look, it looks strangely like my butt because I've sat on it. But here is Jim Nance. He sits down because they're on Pebble Beach. It's very exciting. And here is Jim Nance, and then I will get to what else he said after this.
Now we are pleased to be joined by the second most famous resident of this area, the incomparable Jim Nance. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for that shout-out invitation the other night. Delighted to be here.
I had to shame you. We just watched that piece. I know you love this area of our great nation, and Samuel Morris is the guy who really was the pioneer in this area of developing it.
I mean, how sanctimonious can you be about an effing golf course? Like, what a beautiful area. Yeah, good. There's a golf course on it. Like, Augusta's a pile of garbage. The city of Augusta's a pile of garbage. And just because you have Augusta National there, all of a sudden it's this heaven on earth?
No, Augusta is just an armpit.
Yeah, it's a piece of garbage. Oh, the beauty. This area. Oh.
Underrated. I mean, truly a visionary. That piece by Clint was sensational. I love the one by Sam Jackson, too, on the Lone Cypress. Joe Montana, some good stuff. But Sam Morris saw the potential here and laid out the land and got the designers for here, for Cypress Point, Spyglass, laid out 17-mile drive, all of that. It made such an impact on me. I collect his art, by the way. I only have a couple of pieces, but I do have the only known oil portrait of the great man.
Some guy who designs.
I'm going to run out and tell all my friends in the street. Wow.
You sell that at auction for $5.
Hey.
Is he talking about the person who designed Pebble Beach?
Oh, yeah. He has the only oil painting that guy has ever done.
Well, there were several watercolors that are in existence.
It's one of my prized possessions. And my youngest daughter, Finley, as you heard from Clint, Samuel Finley Brown Morris. My second daughter is named Finley. Out of respect for the great boss of Pebble Beach.
What? That's just fantastic.
Happy thing to be named after.
Yeah.
You named your daughter after an architect of a golf course.
Oh, I mean, is there anyone more sanctimonious in the entire world than Jim Nance? And then after this is done, I'll tell you, I wish we had the audio, but I'll tell you just how such a douche what he had to say after this.
Well, that's just fantastic. And to have you on our air, I'll just say it right now on camera, looking into that lens, he is the best to ever call golf on television. So thanks.
Oh, it's true.
Oh, keep saying that.
Yeah, baby. You know it's true. It goes without saying. I don't even know why you're mentioning it.
On television. So thanks for joining us. Have you ever seen this golf course living in this area look like this at this time of the year?
Well, it gets a lot of play, and this is what's amazing about Chris Dahlhammer, the superintendent. I've heard you guys mention him a couple of times. You can't give him and his entire team enough shout-outs for what they've done, because it is a public course, and it's busy. It's full every day, virtually every day. So, you know, to get it this pristine, it's an amazing accomplishment. When you get those shots that you guys have out over the ocean, the drone shots, things we haven't seen before, hats off to you. It's sensational.
Well, I don't even know what I'm doing in here with the two NFL juggernaut.
Who's that?
Who is that again?
Is that Azinger?
Yeah.
Hey, bud.
You guys, I'm telling you. Has it changed much through the years, really, at Pebble Beach? You've been here a while now.
Been here a while. Now, there's something about it that life just feels so sweet when you're here. There's an extra sensory, I call it sensory overload, when you live here. You come here. Everybody's happy when they're here, if you notice. This is a bucket list thing to come out and see Pebble Beach. So that was one of the real draws. I wanted to come here since I was a little boy. So I feel very fortunate. Having grown up for a portion of my youth in the East Bay in Moraga, I got exposed to Pebble Beach when I was 10. And shortly thereafter, and CBS started bringing me here in 1986, 34 consecutive Crosbys, as I call it, the AT&T. And it was always a goal. I wanted to live here, and I tell you, high expectations, they've been met and exceeded.
Okay, so he goes on to say, all right, so he goes on to say that he was married on the seventh hole of Pebble Beach. Now, Pebble Beach, seventh hole, the tee box, he was married on the tee box. So it's the tee box, and then there's this, like, stonework. It's an elevated tee box, and then there's, like, stonework underneath it.
Yeah.
So he goes, you know, I had a recreation of the seventh hole built in my backyard. And, you know, if, why don't you come over? Just walk over there. It's a quick walk and, you know, see if you can't hole it. You know, just go over there in the backyard and play this imaginary hole that I put up there. And it's like, what douche? First of all, gets married on the tee box. Mm-hmm. And second of all, when you, he says, I'm going to walk up and like watch. And he's like, you know, I did everything on Father's Day, you know, went to church, ate breakfast, showed him my, how I like my toes. And then he's like, and then I just walk down here. I'll walk right back up. And he lives within walking to, like, he can just walk up. He lives on the golf course. And this douche builds a small
version
of the seventh hole and starts inviting people over there. The hell's wrong with you? I mean, he's insane.
I have a tattoo of the head groundskeeper on my left butt cheek. His name is Ryan Jameson.
Yeah, and there's a gentleman that works in the pro shop named Joe. And he just sells golf balls like there's nobody's business.
Named my dog after him.
I have the only painting made entirely out of popsicle sticks in existence. Of the man who did the stonework on hole 7. I mean, he's just the worst. It's my, you know, guys, I have the only oil painting in existence of this one guy no one's ever heard of. Wait a second. The only one?
It could fetch you a lot in the black market.
And like, how do you even know it's the only one? Like,
he's not allowed to make anymore?
No, it's just, you know, he went over and he got it to, they gave it the stamp of approval. So, and whatever Joe Buck said, you could tell, because Nance ain't leaving. Once Nance sits down, he ain't leaving. He's like, you know, he's having the time of his life sitting there. He's telling you everything that you got to know. He's telling you who designed the course. He's telling you who the superintendent of the course is. Mm-hmm. I heard you mention his name a couple times. And they were doing all this weird stuff, too. They were like, did you guys see any of the openings that they had
where, no.
Where they did the voiceovers and no. Showed like stuff
they're
around
always
the course?
Way too, golf is just, boy, it takes itself way too seriously.
No, this was the opposite.
Oh, really? So it was like,
they had one,
WWE?
They had one that was, strangely enough, the dogs talking. Apparently dogs are allowed to frolic on the beach. And then it was like, hey, this is great. I have to go
speak to that horse.
Yes. It's like, it was these dogs playing. And they were like, wow, this is great. Like, hey, I'm in the beach. Uh-oh, I'm getting wet. And you're thinking, what the hell? Like, what the hell? Is this to prove, like, they didn't destroy the environment? What are you doing? It's the craziest thing. Dogs are allowed on the beach.
Do you know where my baby is?
Well, that's what the dogs were saying, apparently.
It says, fast or slow, they both jog around the beach. Uh-oh, I'm getting wet.
Did he take off his tie and give it to Joe Buck?
I was just going to say, when he left,
he gave him a microphone and said, Here, son, here's your microphone back. I'm the best. All right, we will be back. The 9th annual Who's Your Caddy Classic is happening Monday, July 15th at 2 o'clock at the Atkinson Resort Country Club just across the border in Atkinson, New Hampshire. And this morning at 9, you can reserve your spot at 98.5thesportshub.com. This is something that you got to be online for early because it sells out within minutes. It's $150 per player, all to benefit the Pediatric Advanced Care Team at Boston Children's Hospital. Tony Maz is going to be there. We're going to be there. Hardy's going to be there. And a bunch of the Sports Hub crew for a day to call off at the Who's Your Daddy Classic. 98.5thesportshub.com is all the details. Time's a ticking. So get involved.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Who's Your Caddy Classic. Those tickets go on sale starting at 9 o'clock. $150 per player. It's going to be at the Atkinson Resort and Country Club there in Atkinson, New Hampshire. Are you going to give me a ride this year, Johnny, like always?
Sure. No problem.
It's a tradition. A tradition unlike any other.
Mm-hmm. That way you can enjoy yourself a little bit more on the course.
Yeah, I'm not driving to New Hampshire after I've been drinking.
Now, last year you went separately. I don't think I brought you last time. I don't know why, but...
I didn't play last year.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, I was out of town.
Okay.
Oh, I thought we all played together.
I thought so, too.
You, me, John, and Greg Bedard.
I thought that... No, I didn't play.
Who's in our group then?
I don't remember. It was you and me and...
And Greg Bedard and...
Yeah, that wasn't me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't there last year.
Okay.
But the year before that, when I played terribly, it was you, me, you guys, me, and...
Our bosses.
No.
It was the three of us.
It was the three of us.
2 years ago.
I think it was just the three of us.
Might have been the three of us. Yeah,
that was kind of fun.
It was fun, but we were so bad. Who cares?
Dude, I practiced for this year's tournament by playing last year's tournament.
Now, I know, but now, Fred, there's no excuse. I mean, you're the man this year. You're carrying us this year.
I'm so bad that people at where I play golf don't want to play with me.
But you really? Play. I don't play.
I know. I have not played since last August.
Just because I play doesn't mean that. That I'm any better than you guys.
Dude, every year, here's how I prepare. I go to my storage space and get my golf clubs, and I buy 50 golf balls for the golf course.
With, skulls and crossbones on them.
The cheapest ones I can find. So if when I hit them in the woods, I go, I don't care.
So you had tie-dye ones last year.
Yeah, it was the Grateful Dead balls, just to piss that off. But they were the cheapest ones, in fairness.
$2 a ball.
Like, some big, it's not a sporting goods store, but some big, like a Walmart or something, sells these golf balls that are all right, but they're super cheap.
Yeah.
But you're only allowed to buy one box at a time.
You see, I've bought those before at Target.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and they're great, and they're, ridiculously inexpensive.
Yeah, because the guy, my neighbor that I play with, but he has to pay guys out in front of the Target or wherever it is. To go in and buy him boxes.
And he's a member of a country club?
Well, they only let you buy one box.
Yeah, but okay. But what I'm saying is that he has enough money to be a member of a country club, but he won't pay an extra $5 per box.
Like, you know,
they're like the PGA Superstore.
Is there anything like you won't buy? Like, is there like anything that you'd like refuse to pay a lot of money for? Like, mine's like razors. Like, that whole thing's a scam.
Well, gas. Like, I always get the cheapest gas.
Yes,
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, for me, it's like razors. Like, I'm like, why the hell is this thing, $25?
Yeah.
It probably costs 5 cents to manufacture. In fact, they lock them up now, but I had a friend who never would pay for them. He would always shoplift them because he refused to pay
for
them.
That's an issue.
All right.
My friend Dave, he would never pay for them, so he always shoplifted them. He'd buy other stuff, but he would steal the razors.
Become a member of Harry's.
Yeah, well,
perfect idea.
I don't think he would do that, but nonetheless, so that whole thing's coming up, and we'll be out there.
It's a good time, and I'm not joking. Right now, get online. And I just tweeted out the link at the Ad Toucher and Rich thing because this sells out within 2 to 3 minutes, and it goes on sale in 2 to 3 minutes.
And it's nothing that, like, in fact, isn't for us, so we're not, like, pimping the thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to sell out, but it's a lot of fun. And if you wanted to get involved, I mean, this is the time to do it.
It's a lot of fun. They do it right. And the golf course is tremendous.
Yeah, you get lunch and dinner, and it's $150.
The meal's great, and if we're lucky, you might get to see an inebriated member of the station run an auction at the end of it, which is always good.
That I remember. That was 2 years ago, and I had to wait specifically for Fred. Fred was not supposed to host the auction at all. That was Hardy's deal. But Fred decided that he was going to go join the festivities, so I sat there in the back of the room and waited an extra 45 minutes for Fred to finish.
Yeah. Now that there's no Chachi, I ain't running any auctions. As soon as Chachi left, that's it for me.
He's like, oh, Fred, you're cracking me up. You're all drunk and yelling.
Are they broadcasting from there?
I think they are. Of course they are.
Yeah. There's nothing.
Midday show's right in the clubhouse.
There's no one happier than the midday show.
Oh, they love it.
One day, if we can hear stories about Zolak pulling up to the course and all the responsible things he's doing as he pulls up there. All right, so those tickets go on sale here, and if we're on delay, so it's going to be...
About a minute from now. Mm-hmm. So get online. Go to @TucherAndRich if you want to find that, or 985sportsup.com. And hopefully we'll see you there.
Yeah.
And then you'll just see at least our threesome. We're going to suck. We're not going to be very good. Fred, you're all right. Fred's one of those people who, like, I think is very, I don't want to say humble, but I mean, he underplays how good he is.
You do too,
Wallach. You're all right.
Wallach's good. But Wallach's better than me. I'm not good. I'm really not good right now. All right. So, you can get that going. And we will be back. David Ortiz. There's a bunch of new information coming out. Who knows what's going on?
This is getting weird. It's taking a turn that they might start digging up stuff that you might be extremely surprised what's been going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, my dad was like, why is like his wife, you know, putting out these messages? And like, and I'm like, you got to figure out that she's pretty, like, if this guy's like the king of the Dominican Republic, that there might be an implicit understanding that, you know, he's going to stray a little bit. Wouldn't you think?
Well, when you're the king of the city and you can do basically anything you want?
Yeah.
Well, on top of that, it looks like there might have been another attempt on his life before the shooting. Yeah. I've got information on that.
All right. We'll have that. No commercials here, just a headline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.